You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Andrea D'Alessandro is one of the hardest working state legislators in Arizona. We need to send Senator D'Alessandro and her strong voice back to the House of Representatives in Legislative District 2, which includes part of Pima County and all of Santa Cruz County. Andrea's hard work as a proven and experienced progressive leader serves the best interest of Arizona. Independents and Democrats, vote for Andrea D'Alessandro for the legislature in Legislative District 2 for the House of Representatives in the August 4th Democratic primary. This message paid for by D'Alessandro for Arizona 2020. Authorized by Andrea D'Alessandro.
I'm Steve Diamond, and I'm running to be your new Pima County Supervisor. This district hasn't had a competitive election in 48 years, and I'm running to finally give voters like you a real choice. Our current County Supervisor, Steve Christie, supports the failed policies of Doug Ducey and Donald Trump. Christie voted against protecting public health during this pandemic. Christie, Ducey, and Trump made Arizona one of the worst COVID-19 hotspots in the world. Pima County can't afford more business as usual. In 2020, change is on the ballot. A vote for Steve Diamond is a vote for environmental protection, fair housing regulations, equal rights, justice, and economic development without tax giveaways. Steve Christie works for special interests. I will work for you. I'm Steve Diamond, and I approve this message. Paid for by Steve Diamond for Supervisor.
If you looked at an organization and found that morale was at an all-time low, staff was quitting in record numbers, and recruitment was bottoming out, wouldn't you look for problems at the top? That's why so many of Pima County's deputies, corrections officers, and commanders say the top problem in the sheriff's department is the man at the top, the sheriff himself. And they say the solution to that problem is Chris Nanos.
We need Nanos for sheriff.
Paid for by Nanos for Sheriff. Authorized by Chris Nanos.
It's now Holberg in Europe. The last three areas of resistance in Germany are falling apart tonight.
Very quickly, kind of a personal note. I had a timing belt that blew up in my car, which didn't let it run and blew up the motor. So I'm trying to think, give me an honest mechanic that can fix this thing or tell me what I ought to do that's going to make the most sense. So I went over to Mike Embry. I said, can you tell me about this car? He said, here's what I'll do with it. And he's going to put a new timing belt, a new engine on it, and it's going to be a new car when he gets through with it. And I'm going to give you a fair price, which he did. And he fixed it. It runs perfect. I didn't want any more car than what I had after I'd left Perfection Auto Works. And this guy is a great guy. All I care about, he was an honest mechanic who did the right thing for me. And I suggest if you have a car problem, you take it to Perfection Auto Works and take it to Mike Emery at 1046 North Beverly. He just fixed the car at a fair price. It runs perfect. Thanks, Mike.
The fault is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Good night and good luck.
Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you and good afternoon. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios in Tucson, Arizona, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum, which is the most talked to and talked about and listened to weekend political talk show in all of Arizona. Thanks for making that possible. Great lineup of guests today. Dr. Matt Hines will be with us, and so much to talk about with the president at Walter Reed Hospital, and of course, testing positive for the coronavirus. We'll talk with Matt Hines just a second from now, and then we're going to talk with Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, and one of the best defense lawyers in America. We'll talk about what now if the president can't serve out his term. What happens? And we'll lay it all out for you. Very relevant show today and a good show. Let's go to Dr. Matt Hines, who is running for the Pima County Board of Supervisors in Supervisor District 2. And Matt, welcome to the show, Doctor. Thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, John. Good to be here.
Well, listen, the White House today has created a startling amount of confusion on the timing of President Trump's coronavirus diagnosis and the status of health through a series of really conflicting statements, as you probably know, injecting an extraordinary degree of uncertainty into the nation's understanding, really, of the president's condition and who may have been exposed to the deadly virus. What can you tell us about what's coming from Walter Reed? First, they say everything's fine, don't worry about it. Second, they say the vital signs are not good, and we really don't know what the outcome's going to be. What do you take from all of that, Doctor?
And John, this is exactly the problem. Transparency in this kind of circumstances is so, so important. And obviously, we all are hoping and praying for the recovery of the first family and all of those who have been recently revealed to have COVID or have the coronavirus. But this is a matter of national security, and the American people must know what is going on. And we cannot have a press conference with a bunch of very impressive-looking doctors in white coats just strut out there and essentially evade the question. It's a very simple question. Has the president been on oxygen at any point in the last 3 days? And that doctor refused to answer three times, four times. I was getting very frustrated, and he kept saying, like, oh, well, he's not on it right now. Stop being evasive. What's going on? How is he doing? And we need to know that because, again, there are certainly national security implications, and we need to know that he's getting better, or if he's not getting better, we need to know what's going on, right? And so I'm not quite sure what exactly is going on in Walter Reed because it's not clear to me that we're getting all the information.
What can this tell us about the early stages of the coronavirus as to how individuals respond to it? We obviously know there were 11 affected, apparently, from the Rose Garden event for the Supreme Court nominee, but this is the right. only person in the hospital is the President of the United States, so that must be a different particular reaction to, obviously, the coronavirus. He's in the hospital, they're not, so tell me what that means.
For sure. In my case, I work here in the hospital in southern Arizona, and during our surge, saw well over 100, probably closer to 200 hospitalized patients with coronavirus. You become hospitalized when it is no longer safe to monitor you in your home, meaning typically that you are deteriorating to the point from a respiratory standpoint, you are having trouble breathing, you're having very high fevers, struggling to get your air, and or you are requiring oxygen. So if the president was, at least for a time, you know, maybe on Friday, requiring oxygen support, that probably alarmed folks. And I think maybe that's what happened, but I'm, again, speculating. But early on in the disease, it can be pretty much asymptomatic, or just a mild cold, sore throat, stuffy, runny nose, that kind of thing, a cough. But as it progresses, and we cannot predict based on, we have no way to predict which patients are going to decompensate or suffer the worst sort of side effects from the and do worse overall in terms of mortality. We can't predict who that's going to be. Like, I can't pick out of a lineup who's going to do the worst versus who's not. There are some ways, though, we can kind of tell. Advanced age, male gender, that is not good. Any heart disease, diabetes, obesity is very problematic. There are other existing lung disease. The course of the disease can change very precipitously, and that is something we all learned in the healthcare system early on, that you could be literally talking to a patient who is hospitalized, maybe on a very low level of oxygen, eating their breakfast, making jokes, everything's fine, and 15 minutes later, there's a code call, then you're rushing to the same room, and the person's blue and not breathing, and you're having to put a tube into their lungs, transfer them to the ICU, and mechanically ventilate them. It is very, very sudden that these changes can happen where patients can suddenly lose the ability to oxygenate. And I don't think that's where the president is, but he is in a high-risk category. So I agree with hospitalizing him, and I agree with monitoring very closely because this is a big deal.
What is the overall effect? Let's assume the treatment is successful and he's able to recover, but is there a long-term effects that may inhibit his health, that may be a problem for him as he goes through this whole process of rehabilitation? What happens?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're all kind of still learning about this because it is a new coronavirus, and we're kind of all in medical school at the same time. But we are seeing that in some cases, folks can have more than just the typical 2 week kind of, you know, like a flu type infection for a couple of weeks, and then everything goes away and you're fine. Some folks are seeing some prolonged symptoms, getting back to where you were before the viral infection can maybe take, weeks to months longer. With this particular infection, people tend to often lose their sense of smell and taste. I know that in some cases that can take a while to come back. And there are certainly some other effects. This virus is highly thrombogenic. It causes the body to inappropriately throw blood clots, form blood clots in the veins of the legs, that can go into the lungs, in the arteries around the heart, brain can cause strokes. So a lot of that kind of stuff can happen during the course of the disease. If those things happen for a particular patient, they could be needing physical therapy, speech therapy, all sorts of additional therapies after the acute illness is over. So, and there are some there's some neurologic changes and manifestations that we're seeing as well, and we're frankly still gathering information. But there are definitely a lot of things that could affect people long term going forward. And then, of course, the majority of people get through this like any other cold or viral illness, and do, they're back to their baselines. But there's a fraction of folks that are going to have long term effects, as you were saying.
We're talking with Dr. Matt Hines. He's running for the Pima County Board of Supervisors. He's a former legislator and a physician. But the one thing concerns all of us is he's the only one with the nuclear codes. I don't have them.
Oh, the president, of course.
Yeah, I mean, so that we have to be a little more concerned about him than almost
Absolutely.
Any other person on the face of this earth who is fighting through the initial stages of the coronavirus. I don't know how it's going to affect him, whether he's going to be able to carry out his responsibilities and duties and whatever, because he's going to be the president through January 20th, no matter what. And I would assume, too, that this hospital stay is going to tell us a great deal. It could be 3 days, could be 10 days. What is your prediction if they are concerned about vital signs, as has been reported from Walter Reed?
Mm-hmm. And that is very troubling to me. One, we were just lied to by a physician in a white coat speaking on behalf of that hospital and the White House. That is tremendously distressing to me, and I think it should be to all of us. But if what we are most recently hearing that there has been some concerning vital signs. By that, I'm assuming they mean elevated heart rate, the fever. There is a fever, but he wouldn't tell us exactly what the number was for some reason, but there was some kind of fever. That makes sense. That goes with this. These are patients that I think we absolutely should be monitoring in a hospitalized setting. And I would say, and they started remdesivir, which is an experimental emergency use authorized by the FDA initially for Ebola and being used to treat folks with coronavirus. I've used it dozens of times for my patients in hospital. I absolutely would have started the same thing if my patient was requiring oxygen. That's usually the trigger, or some changes on the X-ray. So again, we're lacking a lot of really clinical data that would allow me to give a very to give too much specifics. But I would say we do see in these folks that are going to decompensate and rapidly decompensate. It happens around the seventh day, about 1 week into your symptomatic phase. So and he will be it seems like he will be in that zone in the next 3 to 4 days. And so absolutely, the next 48 to 72 hours are crucial, because that's the time frame when that that hyperactive inflammatory response phase can kick in. And that's the thing, basically our immune system finally kind of starts to figure out this virus everywhere. It flips out, and then it goes a little too far, and we end up with fluid accumulating in the lungs. And essentially, that's what causes people to, if we can't support them adequately, that's what causes people to die, is all that fluid that gets into the lungs, and we can't get it out fast enough. If it's going to happen, to the president, which we hope it doesn't, would be something that most likely would happen in the next, the next 3 to 4 days.
Well, there's no question he probably has the best care of anybody on earth, wouldn't you suggest? We may not know what that care is, but
he's in a really good place. Stop lying to us.
They are lying, aren't they?
They are lying. Stop it. We do not want the president to be harmed. Nobody wants that. This isn't political, okay? We need to have a commander-in-chief. We need China to know that we have a commander-in-chief. We need Putin to know that we have a commander-in-chief and that everything is like as it should be. That is extraordinarily important. And to have all this like mealy-mouth, namby-pamby BS going on, I can't have, we have, like, I would prefer that they just shut up and not do a press conference at all than come out and try to like bamboozle us. Sorry.
That was a ridiculous wallpaper of doctors, wasn't it? I mean,
totally.
I was absolutely incensed by that and frightened by it, too, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. As a professional myself, how could, if someone asked me for political expediency to go out to a microphone and kind of sort of paint a rosy picture of what seems to be a concerning situation that we should all know about, I would resign. Like if I was like commanded to do that, I would just say, I'm sorry, sir. I'm not able to do that because I took an oath. And that is like, no, in that case, I think he also took an oath to the Constitution, not just to do no harm, Hippocratic. So no, that is not how you do things. You should not be using our medical experts in their white coats to try to ameliorate a potentially politically problematic situation. That's not what we're supposed to be doing.
I'm so glad I'm talking with you, Dr. Hines. I really am. Let me take a quick break here, and then I want to come back, sure. And you can talk about your campaign. We'll have about 5 minutes to do that. And great. I know that you're getting toward the end of this effort. You're an odds-on favorite because of the district being so Democrat, and you've won an overwhelming amount of support in the primary election. And going to the Board of Supervisors, I want to talk about that just briefly. But let me take a quick break, and we'll come back. Thank you. Stay with me, please.
Sure thing.
Dr. Matt Hines on the John C. Scott Political Forum. Now this. Rex Scott is running for Pima County Supervisor in District 1. For almost 30 years, Rex has been an educator, working as a teacher and an administrator in public schools. Rex Scott's nearly three decades in public education gives him the experience in finding common ground and determining solutions to complex issues. Rex Scott knows District 1. He has served three schools within the district, Floyd Wells Junior High School, Ironwood Ridge High School, and Tortolita Middle School. Rex started his career in public service as the youngest member ever in the city council in his hometown of Athens, Ohio. With 23 years of service as an appointed or elected leader, Rex is far and away the best qualified person to be the next District 1 supervisor. Rex Scott pledges to be accessible, visible, a supervisor with leadership worthy of these challenges. Vote for Rex Scott for supervisor. This message is paid for and authorized by Scott for Supervisor 2020.
Hello, my name is Representative Pam Powers Hanley. I grew up in a tiny house in the Rust Belt, but my family always had food on the table and a roof over our heads. Arizona's children don't have those luxuries. I proposed legislation to expand maternal and child health and to tackle adverse childhood experiences like food, housing, and financial insecurity. Although Democrats held 48% of the legislature, Republicans blocked good bills like these with partisan gamesmanship. It's time for a new day. Instead of feather-bedding corporations with tax breaks, the legislature should guarantee food and housing security and quality schools for all of Arizona's children. It's time to prioritize the people's to-do list of education, healthcare, infrastructure, and security. As a progressive Democrat, I ask for your vote on November 3rd. Paid for by Powers Hanley for House 2020, I am Pam Powers Hanley. I authorize this message.
Ethan Orr served in the Arizona House of Representatives. He was called one of the most effective House members in decades. Serving in the majority party, Ethan reached across the aisle, bringing both sides together to benefit Southern Arizona. Now, Ethan Orr returns to public service as a candidate for the Pima College Board of Governors. He is one of the most qualified candidates to ever seek this important position. Ethan Orr is the right choice for Pima College Board. This message paid for by Ethan Orr for Pima College Board. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. My guest is Dr. Matt Hines, candidate for the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Supervisor District 2. Matt, I wanted to ask you this question. I forgot to do it the last time we were together, but I have time to do it now, and that is, if you win, and you more than likely will, and you serve full-time in a full-time job with the Board of Supervisors, will you be able to practice medicine as you did when you were a legislator? What is your plan? To continue your medical career.
Yeah, and I know that I have some experience with balancing public service alongside of my hospital duties and patient care duties, because when I was in the legislature, as you mentioned, driving up, 2 hours each way, right? Driving up to the legislature there for 4 days and sometimes 5 days a week for the first half of the year, at least for during those 4 years, I was able to work with my partners, my physician partners, and the hospital, and move it so that I would do shifts, typically overnight shifts, like on Thursdays, Fridays, over the weekend, that kind of thing, so that it would not significantly conflict. In most cases, it didn't really ever conflict with the requirements of the office at that time. I was then asked by the president to work for Health and Human Services for a couple of years, and when I worked on some pandemic stuff there too. And that requires an airplane, obviously, to get to Washington, D.C., but even then, I was able to do some part-time work at the hospital and flew back and forth a couple times a month to do so. In this case, I live about a mile from where the county offices would be if I'm elected, and I will be able to practice, maybe not full-time, but I'll be able to reduce my schedule and make sure that those shifts are overnight or on the weekend so that it doesn't interfere with my duties for the public.
Yeah, that obviously is an office that is open, I guess, 5 days a week and whatever, and I think it really depends upon a quality staff. I think many supervisors can be judged by the people that they hire, and it's just the most critical, I think, decisions any elected official in Southern Arizona can make, because you just really need somebody that can take care of the business that you can't. And I know you've got some people that have helped you in the campaign and the people you depend on to put together a really effective staff when you're elected. So I wanted to kind of clear that up. You do some of your practice, even with the Board of Supervisors. I have 2 minutes. Tell people why they ought to elect you to the Board of Supervisors and Supervisors Institute. 2 minutes, go.
So I think it's important to have the board, especially this time during our pandemic, it's important to have perspective from the medical field. I bring that unique perspective at this time, and as we're navigating the pandemic, we're going to be at some point in the next year, I hope sooner rather than later, distributing a vaccine. It's not going to be all available all at once. We're going to have a system to do that, and of course, the health department's going to be involved there. Supervisors aren't directly employing everybody in the county. We work through a county administrator system, but just being able to inform the decisions going forward on the pandemic, on the economic recovery post-pandemic that came as a result of the virus, so many things that I think that my perspective from being in the health profession and being on the front lines of this pandemic, that I will be able to inform the conversations that we have on the board if elected, and then if I'm able to serve on behalf of District 2.
I am so damn glad you won that primary. I really am.
Thank you.
I've been a huge fan of yours for a long period of time. And this is a critical position, not only with your background and your expertise on this board during these times, but I'm going to tell you, I think Pima County and the city of Tucson are in for some very, very difficult times. I don't think we realize how much of an economic blow that we're all going to suffer. Not only what we've gone through, but what we'll have to go through to recover from this, which I think is going to take years. I mean, we saw 2007, 2008, and what it did to us, devastated many businesses and families in Southern Arizona. This is going to be, I think, 10 times worse than that. But we're going to need some very strong people to get us through it. I think you're one of those. Thanks for being with us, Doctor. I appreciate it. Hope people will vote for you. And I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Thanks for sharing of yours with us.
Of course, you too. Have a good one.
Thank you, Dr. Matt Hines. We're going to be back with one of my favorite guests, articulate, brilliant Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party. What now for a succession if Trump can't? For the past 20 years, Beth Ford has served Pima County residents as their county treasurer. 5 times Beth has asked for the support of Pima County voters, and each time voters have responded with a resounding yes. Once again, Beth Ford asks for your vote for Pima County Treasurer. Beth Ford is committed to providing the most professional and efficient service for all of Pima County. Experience matters. Vote for Beth Ford for Pima County Treasurer. This message is approved and paid for by Beth Ford for Treasurer 2020.
I'm Nick Pearson. My motto for many years has been La Comunidad Primero, the community first. Our children are the most important part. We must improve academics and close the student achievement gap. We must improve the technology gap and stabilize the district financially. I'm experienced and well-qualified to serve on the TUSD school board. I will provide the balance and strong finance background needed to help stabilize the school district. I'm running for the TUSD governing board, and I'm seeking your vote on November 3rd.
Since 1996, Sharon Bronson has served the people of Pima County with leadership, honor, and commitment to responsible government. Sharon led the way for the passage of the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan, which has protected environmentally sensitive lands while assuring new growth pays for itself. Sharon Bronson is a leader, and through these difficult times, we need her leadership more now than ever. Vote for Sharon Bronson for Supervisor in District 3. This message approved and paid for by Bronson for Supervisor. There is one thing certain that political allies and adversaries of Michael Hicks can agree on. Michael Hicks tells it like it is, speaks his mind, and is always plain-spoken. If we ever needed these qualities in a state legislator, we need them now. Arizona is going through some of the most difficult times in our history. The coronavirus pandemic has threatened the health and lives of all Arizonans. The economic devastation will be felt for years. We need a strong voice in the State House of Representatives. We need Michael Hicks. Michael Hicks is the right choice for the State House of Representatives in District 10. This message paid for by Michael Hicks for State Representative. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. With me now, Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, one of the best defense lawyers in America. Jeff, thanks for being with us. These mixed messages coming out of Walter Reed on the condition of our president is alarming to just about everybody. But you can't make this last week up. What happened with the debacle? They called a debate, or a debate that became a debacle. And now the president in Walter Reed, 11 people infected, and he's the only one hospitalized. He's got the nuclear codes with him. You can't make it up, Jeff. You just can't make it up.
Well, I tell you, as we look back at that night of that debate, one thing stands out, and that is that all of the entourage that came with the president were forced to arrive wearing masks. But the minute they got inside the facility, they took their masks off. And doctors from the Cleveland Clinic approached them and said, "You need to put your masks back on." And the entire Trump clan refused to put their masks on. And then, of course, we saw that unbelievable so-called debate. And we saw, you know, Trump mocking Joe Biden for wearing a mask, and then within less than 72 hours, the president is on Marine One on his way to the hospital with the COVID-19 virus. So I think this tells you a lot about this presidency and about Donald Trump. Maybe now he'll quit making fun of people wearing masks. And now we look around and we know that he hosted what was, in essence, a super spreader event last weekend at the White House for this radical, crazy conservative woman that he's nominated to the Supreme Court. And not only did many of the people test positive who were at that event, but even the president of the Notre Dame University tested positive, as well as many other senators and others who were present at that event. So, I mean, the president has turned himself into, a modern day super spreader and of the virus himself personally. People in contact with him who were preparing him for the debate, such as Chris Christie, such as Hope Hicks, and his White House press secretary, they've all come down positive with the virus as well. So, this is beginning to be a who's who of the White House and the Republican governing establishment are all coming down moment after moment with the coronavirus, all because they behaved as irresponsibly as this president did.
What do you think this election is, and how will the hospitalization of the president of the United States at Walter Reed affect the outcome? Here you have Biden 7 points up in Pennsylvania, 5 up in Florida, all of these critical states that Clinton lost 4 years ago are in the apparently Biden column at the moment. Do you see any major effects here of what's going on as we approach the really 30 days out of this very critical election, probably the most important in our lifetime? What do you think? Let's talk the politics of what's happened after the debacle and now the coronavirus and the president.
Well, certainly none of this helps the president. I can only think of one scenario in which he could possibly be helped by what has occurred here, and that is if he recovers extremely quickly and comes back 100% really fast. He can then go back to denying the lethality of the virus and saying, you know, I'm a strong, tough guy. Look, I was able to defeat this virus. But, you know, when you look at Boris Johnson and in Great Britain, the prime minister, you know, he's still having medical effects as well as mental effects of the virus. And he was hospitalized for, you know, some time and was actually placed on a ventilator. So, you know, this virus has long lasting consequences. And for someone who's morbidly obese, and the only reason he's not classified morbidly obese is he lies about his height by adding an inch or two. But if you plug him into the scales of obesity, he's morbidly obese. He's 74 years old and has a horrible diet and has coronary artery disease. So, you know, he has a lot of factors that make him very, very vulnerable. And while I would hate to see him die of it, I'd really hoped he'd actually die of old age in prison once he's been defeated. I don't want to see him die now. But, you know, I think the only scenario in which he's helped by this is if he recovers rapidly and extremely well, which doesn't seem to be a high likelihood. All other indications are that this hurts him because, once again, it brings the COVID virus front and center in this campaign and his mishandling of it. I mean, there isn't any doubt in my mind that of the 209,000 people who died in America, that had we had a responsible president at the helm when this hit in January and February, we would have lost half or less than that, half of those people. And like many other countries who behaved responsibly and had lower death rates. I mean, I say it constantly. We have 4 to 5% of the population of the world, yet we have 20 to 25% of the deaths from the coronavirus in the world. You know, how is that making America great again? And he made us the laughingstock of the world and pitied by the rest of the world when they used to look up at us as a shining beacon of what a democracy could be.
Let's talk a little bit about what happens if the president cannot assume his responsibilities. Just a quick summary of what we might foresee if the president does not recover rapidly and fully at Walter Reed this week or in the next 48, 72 hours. Go ahead.
Well, the 25th Amendment, which was proudly authored by a friend of my grandfather's, Senator Birch Bayh of Indiana, it calls for basically clarifying, you know, what happens. And so we've seen three times with George W. Bush when he had a colonoscopy and with Ronald Reagan when he had cancerous colon polyps removed, where they voluntarily relinquished their power by sending a letter pursuant to the 25th Amendment to the President Pro Tem of the Senate and to the House Majority Leader saying, I relinquish my powers to the Vice President temporarily. And then once they feel well enough, they can then basically say, you know, send a letter to the same people saying, now I've taken control back. And so that's a pretty simple one. I can't see Trump ever doing that under any circumstances, even if he knew he had to go into surgery or knew he was going to be unconscious. He's so stubborn, I can't imagine him doing that. But should he become incapacitated and not do that prior to being incapacitated, then the vice president and a majority of the cabinet can vote to take his power away from him temporarily. And they do that by sending a message to the President Pro Tem of the Senate and the House Majority Leader that the Vice President with more than half of the cabinet has elected to basically place him in control. President could then, if he were able, physically and mentally able, could contest that. And if he contested it, then that would take two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate to maintain the situation with the vice president staying in control. Should the vice president then somehow get the coronavirus and not be able to exercise his duties pursuant to that, then we have the Presidential Succession Act, which calls for a list and a number of people, and it goes from the president to the vice president to the Speaker of the House. So Nancy Pelosi would become president if Pence were unable to, and then after that, the president pro tem of the Senate. And then it starts with the Secretary of State and goes on down through various cabinet members who would be available to take over should one. And both the 25th Amendment and this are premised on the idea that something catastrophic happens. They really don't envision the kind of scenario that we're seeing right now, where you have somebody who's just going to be ill and maybe unable, maybe temporarily and maybe permanently, from carrying out the duties of the presidency.
Let me take a quick break, and then I want you to come back and tell me what has happened this last week, the debate, and then the Walter Reed stay of the president, and how it affects really what's going to happen on November 3rd. Is this thing a done deal? Is it all over? That's a question that I will ask you, and you can speculate on that in just a moment. Stay with me, Jeff. I appreciate it. Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, one of the best defense lawyers in America, regular contributor to the John C. Scott Political Forum. We're so pleased to have him with us. We'll be back with Jeff after these messages.
It's now over in Europe. The last three areas of resistance in Germany are falling apart tonight.
Very quickly, kind of a personal note. I had a timing belt that blew up in my car, which didn't let it run and blew up the motor. So I'm trying to think, give me an honest mechanic that can fix this thing or tell me what I ought to do that's going to make the most sense. So I went over to Mike Embring. I said, can you tell me about this car? He said, here's what I'll do with it. And he's going to put a new timing belt, a new engine on it, and it's going to be a new car when he gets through with it, and I'm going to give you a fair price, which he did, and he fixed it. It runs perfect. I didn't want any more car than what I had after I'd left Perfection Auto Works, and this guy is a great guy. All I care about, he was an honest mechanic who did the right thing for me, and I suggest if you have a car problem, you take it to Perfection Auto Works and take it to Mike Embry at 1046 North Beverly. He just fixed the car at a fair price. It runs perfect. Thanks, Mike.
The fault is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Good night and good luck.
I'm Catherine Ripley, and I'm running for Pima Community College Governing Board for District 1. I'm a retired U.S. Naval officer of 26 years, former diplomat, mother of two, and now an adjunct professor of political science at the college I've grown to know and love. Now more than ever, we need leaders with critical decision-making skills to prepare our workforce for post-pandemic recovery. I wish to be your voice to help protect those efforts. Visit our campaign at catforpcc.com. I'm Catherine Ripley, and I approve this message that is paid for by Catherine Ripley for Governing Board.
I'm Steve Diamond, and I'm running to be your new Pima County Supervisor. This district hasn't had a competitive election in 48 years, and I'm running to finally give voters like you a real choice. Our current County Supervisor, Steve Christie, supports the failed policies of Doug Ducey and Donald Trump. Christie voted against protecting public health during this pandemic. Christie, Ducey, and Trump made Arizona one of the worst COVID-19 hotspots in the world. Pima County can't afford more business as usual. In 2020, change is on the ballot. A vote for Steve Diamond is a vote for environmental protection, fair housing regulations, equal rights, justice, and economic development without tax giveaways. Steve Christie works for special interests. I will work for you. I'm Steve Diamond, and I approve this message. Paid for by Steve Diamond for Supervisor.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. My guest is Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, one of the best defense lawyers in the country, and a regular contributor to the John C. Scott Show. Jeff, let me ask you about where we are with this election. You would think that no candidate, Trump certainly, could survive one hit after another from these debacles, which was the debate, and now the coronavirus, of which he mocked and now is a victim of. How do you win with all of this negative behind you and in front of you and a part of you, how could you possibly win this race? I don't get it.
I don't. And you're leaving out one of the major things from last weekend. You know, 2 days on Sunday and then on Tuesday, major New York Times articles basically explaining what a failure as a businessman Donald Trump is, and what a cheater he is on his taxes. And I think this cake is baked. I mean, barring something astonishing occurring over the next few weeks, this cake is baked, and I think he's pretty well done. There's really not much out there left that he can do to shore up his base. And the problem is that he has never had a realistic approval rating of over 45%. He's the first president ever in the history since we had decent polling to never break 50%. And his disapproval rating has been over 50% always since the beginning. And so, you know, that those are people who are going to vote against you one way or the other. And with the margin being as wide as it is the idea of a narrow electoral college win like he pulled off last time is becoming, you know, less and less viable as an option. New polling out of Michigan, out of Florida, Ohio, Iowa, Arizona, and other places show that, you know, not only is he in danger of losing this pretty much firmly, but he's in danger of really a landslide. I mean, if we pick up North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, and Iowa, places like that, this is going to be an embarrassing rout of the Republicans. And frankly, it's something we need. We really need to punish the entire Republican Party for standing behind Donald Trump. And America will be well served by just a complete and utter destruction of the current Trump Republican Party in favor of something that is more of a party of ideas, even if they're ideas you don't agree with, that they have ideas and principles like they had 20 years ago. And I think we'll be well served by a rout of this president. And I think that's what's coming. I'd be surprised and shocked if anything else happened, given this late date and given how the polling is shaping up and the improvements that have been made in polling since 2016.
So you think the Senate is very possible in the hands of the Democrats? I would assume that maybe Iowa's in play. That's unbelievable. The idea, too, Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico, some of these Southwest states. But North Carolina, that would be really unusual. And then you get into a situation where Pennsylvania may be in play. And Ohio and Florida, of course, but you see the possibility of a tsunami that not only takes the Senate and keeps the House with even additional House members as well as the presidency. That would be just an overwhelming rout of the GOP.
I do, but I think the Senate became a little more questionable today. This Cal Cunningham is running against Tom Tillis. That looked like a race we were probably going to pick up. And emerging reporting is showing that Cunningham, who had an enormous third quarter fundraising and was really leading in all the polls against Tillis, now has a scandal on his hands. And that's a scandal involving some, you know, they're calling it sexting, but it's basically just telephone texting messages between a woman who's not his wife and him that are pretty explicit and kind of reflect probably an ongoing affair, or at least a dalliance that might have not quite reached the level of an affair. And in a state like North Carolina, that could be pretty damaging. So that one concerns me a great deal. Maybe we get lucky and Jamie Harrison beats Lindsey Graham, and that picks up one that we hadn't expected. And that was very close, and the Democrat is raising a lot of money in that one as well. So, you know, that's some bad news that came out for Democrats today. It's actually just recently, I mean, within the last few hours.
By the way, here in Arizona, you know, Kelly had a huge lead, maybe double digits. It doesn't seem to be that kind of commanding lead at the moment. Is he in trouble?
Well, the new poll that came out yesterday showed him only 9 points ahead. So,
well, it's not double digits, so there you go.
Yeah, some have shown, 11, 13. There was even one that showed 17 points ahead. It was bound to narrow a little bit as time went by and as people continue to digest these hugely dishonest ads that McSally and her supporters are running against him. I mean, they're just blatant lies. And so that might cut into it a little bit, but I'd bet my house that Mark Kelly's going to beat McSally, and I think Biden's going to win this state too. I don't think he's got as convincing of a lead as Kelly, but I think Biden's going to win Arizona, and I feel certain that Kelly is going to crush McSally and end her career as it well should be ended.
I don't know. I mean, we've just got a couple minutes left here. I don't know how Trump can continue to campaign being ill and hospitalized now and then perhaps getting out of the hospital. How do you do that? I'm not so sure you can do it. Can you?
No. And not only that, I mean, he's going to have to show some respect for medical science. Even if he recovers from this, he's going to be, 14-day quarantine. You can consider that maybe two or three of those days have already passed, maybe four if you're real generous with when he might have gotten it. But still, that takes him out of campaigning altogether. Given his age and his other comorbidities, I think he'll be lucky to survive this without dying or having some long-term consequences. There are an awful lot of people who, are still suffering long-term consequences months after initially recovering from this virus. It has some things that can affect people for maybe years to come and maybe for the rest of their lives.
So if he loses, will he go quietly? Do you expect him to do that? Or would it be a terrible mess?
Oh, of course not. Unless he's really physically disabled by this virus, I don't expect him to go quietly. I expect him to holler and scream all the way out. And the Republicans, that's a nightmare for them because, with him screaming up from the sidelines, I was treated unfairly by the public. I lost the first few years of my presidency because of the Russia investigation. I was cheated. I mean, I can just hear it all. And with him howling that from the sidelines for 4 years, it doesn't give the Republican Party a great deal of opportunity to sort of reinvent itself back into something that becomes viable again in America.
Well, they've got to start it all over again. I got about 1 minute left. How do they do that? Just 1 minute to tell me, how do you rebuild a party after this absolute disaster?
Well, I think you probably go back to what they think are their grassroots, which is basically, a smaller, limited government, strong defense, and a very, tough foreign policy. I mean, those are the kinds of things that drove the party for the last, until Trump came along, for the last 50, 60 years. And whether you agreed with them or not, it was a recipe for success in some years and not so much in some other years.
About 15 seconds left. You're going to get rid of the racist tag, too. You really do. You have to get that
out. You've got to do that. I mean, you would have thought the party of Lincoln would have shed that a long time ago, but Trump has doubled them down on it.
Jeff, thanks for being with us. Great to talk with you. Have a great weekend. Thanks for sharing part of yours
you
with
too,
us.
John.
Thank you. Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, and we want to thank Dr. Matt Hines, candidate for the Board of Supervisors, and his medical observations of the president at Walter Reed. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this has been the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks for listening to us. We'll be back next week, 3 to 4 on this Saturday afternoon. Hope you will join us. Have a good weekend, everybody.
But they can make anything bad because they are the fake, disgusting news.
This is kayfake. Donald Trump was seen laying thousands of $100 bills near the Capitol building to repay the Russians for an easy election. Now the weather. Jane?
Thank you, Jim. Today it's going to snow and hail.
But it's September.
Yeah, I know. It's all Trump's fault.
Do you often wonder if the diagnosis and estimate from your auto repair shop is, well, fake? Are you told the car needs one repair, and after that repair, the problem is still exactly the same? At Perfection Auto Works, when you get our free inspection and diagnosis, it's never fake. We back our repairs with our one-year, 12,000-mile warranty. Call Perfection Auto Works today for an appointment. 323-8650. Brakes, belts, emissions, complete auto repair. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.